Before we started, I was talking to Brother Hall, and he'd asked what we were studying this quarter, and I said, "Well, we're just doing a Wendell Winkler book," and I'd said, "Today, particularly, I'm teaching over overcoming hatred," and we just got to talking about how, at least for him, and I can say for myself, when we're younger, when we're children, it seems like we don't have that hard of a time of overlooking or not seeing hatred. I think it might be that when we're younger, we don't fully understand what hate or what hatred truly is. But then as you get older, as you get into the adult life, as you get into working, you finally kind of see, oh, wow, you see what hatred is. And you either find, wow, I've been hateful. Or you're like, wow, this is something new to me. I don't know what this is. I don't know how to handle it. He, unfortunately, as many other things, it's something that's in the church. And many times we might not understand, we might not see it. The members might not truly understand it, or they might have a different outlook on what hate truly is. When I was growing up, when I was younger, as I said, I didn't fully understand what hate was. And I remember one time, I think I told my mom or I told my brother, one of them, that I hate them. And my mom just said, "James, you do not say that." And she's like, "Hate is basically telling someone you wish they were dead." And so that kind of molded what I thought of as hate, is that if you hate someone, you are wishing them dead. You might not actually want to pull the trigger, but it's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like saying that if they died, that it wouldn't bother you. That's how I thought of hatred. So as many other people, when they start their topics this summer, what's a definition of hatred? Or what, when I say hatred, when I say hate, what do you guys think of? What would be your definition? Great dislike. I use Webster's for most of mine, but Webster defined it as extreme dislike or disgust. Another one for it was ill will or resentment that is usually mutual. Prejudiced hostility or animosity. Which, I mean, ill will. I've gotten to the point to where, if I wanted to say I hate someone, I just say, well, I dislike them. Because I don't hate them. I don't want them dead, but I'm not a big fan of theirs. They might not be a big fan of mine. They might hate me and not know it. I don't hate them. I just have a dislike for them. I might have a great dislike. I don't want them dead. Something else I did is what most of these have been overcoming something. What's the definition for overcoming? Rising above. Again, using Webster's dictionary. To overcome is to get the better of. So we're overcoming hatred. So we're getting the better of hatred. I just think of it this way. When we get the better of someone, what have we done? If you're thinking of it in the right mindset, we have made ourselves better than them by not sinking to their level, by not acting like they do. And if someone hates you, how do you overcome that hatred? You don't return kind for kind. And we'll get into that a bit more later, but how do we overcome hatred? How do we rise above hatred? How do we get the better of hatred? Gaining an understanding. We can do that. My 3 points this morning. We have to be like God. After that, we have to, I just went blank. Randy just said, we have to know hate. And then third, we have to understand the cure for hate. Because any wrong thing, there's a cure for it. Go with me to Proverbs chapter 6 first. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. This isn't going to make sense right now, but throughout the study, this is going to start to click into, or I'm hoping it'll click in. Everything will make sense. Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19. These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, an heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. That's my main text for this lesson, and we're going to hit on it back and forth time and time. And as I said, I hope it'll make sense to you as we go through it. But so think of those seven things are things that God hates. So we know that God hates things, but does he hate people? To be like God, we have to hate the sin. We have to hate the sin. As I just made a point of, God does not hate the sinner. He hates the sin. God does not condemn the sinner to hell for being a sinner. He condemns him to hell for continuing in that transgression of the law, which sin is a transgression of the law. Transgression is breaking that law. So God doesn't, oh, you're a sinner, you're going to hell. Or else we'd all be doomed. Because we have, at one point or another, transgressed the law. So we're not going to hell because we're sinners. We're going to hell because we have continued in that transgression. So we have to be like God in hating the sin, but loving the sinner. And I kind of think of this, and I'm like, well, at times it's hard for us to do that. And the Brother Wendell uses a quote by C.S. Lewis that is extremely powerful. C.S. Lewis wrote, "It occurred to me that there was one man for whom I had been doing this all of my life," meaning that he was able to hate the sin but love the sinner. He'd said, "There is one man," or "It occurred to me that there was one man for whom I had been doing this all of my life, myself." And if you look back, I mean, as I've said, we've sinned. I know that I've sinned. I've made my mistakes. And yet I can look past those. I can still accept myself. I can still love myself. But, and I mean, just for those of us that are married, the person that's closest to you, you can always see their faults a lot easier. I know Rachel can see mine. I can see Rachel's. Ours are at times so alike each other that we can only see it in them. We can't see it in ourselves. But you hit that point where you're like, I've done that too. But we can look at someone else. We can look at the person that we truly hate, and it's, well, you know what, they're like this. They just have that bad attitude. They do this wrong. They do that wrong. And we don't stop and take a step back and, well, you know what? I do that. I have a bad attitude like that. It's easy for us to ignore ourselves and look at everyone else. Look back to Proverbs 6 again, 6 through 19. All of those things that God hates. What is the first thing that is said that God hates? A proud look. If you have a proud look, are you prideful? Yes or no? I'm taking it that if you were to have a proud look, because we later on, or throughout the rest of the Bible, God makes it a point that he does not like the pride. He does not like the prideful. If we have a proud look, would we not have a problem with pride? And as I was going through this, as often as I saw the issues with pride, it hit home, because I know I have a very big problem with pride. And at times it is hard for me to keep that pride in check. Pride then leads us to believe that we can transgress the law and incur no consequences. And that's basically for me. For many years, I would, before I knew that I had a pride problem, I'd sit there and I would do something. And I'm like, well, I mean, I'm a Christian. It's okay. Just because I'm a Christian doesn't make it okay for me to transgress the law. Just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean that I'm once saved, always saved. I mean, luckily, I went to Memphis and thank the Lord, Memphis and studying the Bible more thoroughly showed me that just because I'm a Christian doesn't give me a get into heaven free card. So transgressing the law still has consequences, whether you're a Christian, whether you're not. Hate has a consequence. And we'll talk about those later once we get to to no hate and then the cure for hatred. But going into it, no hate. We have to know hate to be able to overcome it. We have to understand its nature. If someone wouldn't mind going to Titus chapter 3, verses 3 through 5, and then someone else go ahead and get Galatians chapter 5, verses 19 through 21. So Titus 3, 3 through 5, and then Galatians 5, 19 through 21. And whenever someone has Titus 3, 3 through 5, go ahead and read it, please. Thank you. So he starts it off by saying, these are things that we once might have partaken in. And then he says that we do it no more because of the washing of a generation. Hate is a sign of one who is in an unregenerate state. And since it's in the church, that could mean, A, that they were baptized not fully understanding what they were admitting to, or B, that they've forgotten their first love. Again, it is so easy for us to hate people just because they're not like us. Even today, with how people have basically changed what hate means, saying that we are hateful. We're not really hateful, but with the definition of hate, how you define hate for yourself. You could be hating someone and you not know it. Someone could be hateful to you, and because they're not falling inside that definition of hate, you might not know it. But so hate is a sign of a person who is in an unregenerate state. Galatians 5, 19 through 21, please. Thank you. So hatred is listed among the works of the flesh. And then notice what Paul says later. He openly remarks that they which do these things shall not inherit the kingdom of heaven. So those that have hatred or are hateful shall not inherit the kingdom of heaven. He has this listed among other prideful sins, such as adultery, fornication, murder. And I mean, for a person to take part in adultery, who are they only looking out for? Looking out for themselves. They're not thinking about who else they're going to hurt. A person taking part in fornication, whether married or not married, looking out for themselves. If you murder someone, whether it's hate or whether it's accidental, you're still thinking about yourself to a certain extent. You can look at just about every sin in the Bible, and one way or another, it has something to do with pride. It has something to do with something that you wanted to do or something you were doing but you didn't want to be wrong. If we look at Romans 1:32, after Paul lists off all of those things that in that context he's talking about that the Gentiles would do, at the end of it, in verse 32, he makes it a point to say that those that take pleasure in them shall be condemned for that. Not just those that are partaking part in it. Not just those that take part in homosexuality. Not those that just take part in hatred and all those things that he lists there. Those that take pleasure in them. So, and I don't think I'm going too far here. If you take pleasure in someone being hated, you're going to not receive the kingdom of heaven as well because you're taking pleasure in it. You can go back to 1 Corinthians 13. Love thinketh no evil. Love does not take joy when someone is wrong or is in the wrong. If you love them, you're not going to take part and you're not going to take pleasure in them being hated. Go to Proverbs 10:18. Proverbs 10:18. There the writer writes, he that hideth hatred with lying lips and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. Now, the word fool is one that I've looked at and I've never entirely understood. I've never looked up what the definition of it is. What is a fool? What do you think the definition of a fool is? Stupid. Lacks wisdom. Again, Webster's definition for a fool, a person lacking in judgment or prudence. A harmlessly deranged person or one lacking in common powers of understanding. So, a fool is someone that lacks judgment or that lacks common powers of understanding. So a fool, and I'm going to put it this way for a reason, someone that hates or has hatred has a lack of judgment and lacks the common powers of understanding. It's going off of that definition and what Proverbs 10:18 says, if you're a fool, if you hide hatred, if you fall within any of those, you lack the common power of understanding and you lack judgment. Go to Psalm 25:19, the psalmist writes, consider mine enemies, for they are many, and they hate me with what? With a nice hatred? With a decent hatred? No, with a cruel hatred. So hatred is cruel. If someone's cruel, they're not looking out for the better interest of other people. They're not looking out for what's best for you. They're looking out for what is pleasurable to them or what will do harm. We can think of it this way. Why did Cain kill Abel? Jealousy, or you could say because he hated that Abel was accepted and he wasn't. Why did Joseph's brothers throw him into the cistern or the well? Because they hated him. And you can say jealousy. Jealousy leads to hate. Joseph's brothers envied what his father had given him. Envy leads to hate. They hated him. Go to Matthew chapter 5 now. And if someone wouldn't mind reading Matthew 5, 43 through 48. Matthew 5, 43 through 48. The word perfect there is translated from the Greek teleos, which can mean perfect or mature. So, a person that has hatred is showing evidence of immaturity. They're not perfect, they're not mature like our Father in heaven. So we can look at it this way. To be spiritually mature is to love just those that we like. Just those that we're on good terms with, or we'd be spiritually mature if we love even our enemies. If we love everyone the way Christ loved us, the way God loves us, we're spiritually mature. And that would mean that to be spiritually immature is to hate anyone. So, to know hate, we have to understand it's harbored by fools. We have to understand it is cruel, evidence of immaturity. This next one, basically, I've entitled it "Give In to the Hate," and I titled that because that is what came to mind at first. For those of the older generation, they most likely have not seen the Star Wars trilogies, and just to give you an understanding as to this, in the third episode, which is I think Return of the Sith or one of those, Anakin Skywalker, before he becomes Darth Vader, he has been talking with Senator Palpatine, and he's already done some things, some things that are considered, evil, incorrect, and he's kind of Anakin's at that point where he's kind of trying to figure out what the next step is. And he's sitting with Senator Palpatine, and Senator Palpatine tells him, give in to the hate. Because hate leads to the dark side. So he basically says, give in to the hate. Let the hate fuel you into what you were meant to become, what you are supposed to do. We have to know hate, because if we don't know it, we're going to give in to it and not know it. Go back to Proverbs again. Proverbs chapter 10, this time we're going to look at verse 12. We're going to look at what happens if we give in to the hate. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12. If someone else wouldn't mind getting Ezekiel 35:11 ready, and then someone else Matthew 12, 36 and 37. Proverbs 10 and verse 12. Hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. So if we give in to the hate, if we become hateful, if we give in to hatred, it's going to cause strife. And it might not cause strife with just the person that we hate. It could cause strife with friends of ours that are mutual acquaintances of that person that we hate. It could cause strife at home with our family, with our loved ones. It just causes strife, plain and simple. It generates envy, which breeds more hate. Ezekiel 35 and 11, please. Thank you. So look at that again. Therefore, as I live, saith the Lord God, I will even do according to thine anger. So they've already been angry. They're already at that point of hating. And according to thine envy, which thou hast used out of thy hatred. So they already hated them. They have envy. It's going to lead to more hate. It leads to sins of the tongue. Matthew 12, 36 and 37, please. Read that once more, please. Hate leads us to saying idle words, leads us to sins of the tongue. And if we give in to that sin, and if we start committing those sins of the tongue, we are then going to be judged according to the words we've spoken. Just like we can go to Revelation 14, 13, we're going to be judged by our deeds. We're going to be judged by the things that we've said. We're going to be judged by if they have brought glory to God, or if they have hurt God. Sin causes, or hate causes strife, generates envy, breeds more hate, leads to sins of the tongue, and then still, it leads to hate, bitterness, and resentment. That's a very good point. And one thing that I kind of just, at least for myself and for Rachel and our marriage, I've come to the point where I can see a lot of the things that irk me about her, that there's something in me too. And they're a part of me that I'm trying to ignore. And so it's every time I look at that, now I've kind of tried to remind myself, well, James, you have the same problem. James, the same thing, it's the same way with you. So it's really that, I guess you could say it's, if you hate someone, that you're being prideful and that you're also self-centered. You're not looking at, well, you know what, could they be acting like that because of something I've done? Or am I just bouncing something off of myself that I don't want to be true about myself and putting it on them? Exactly. Because of us, exactly. Two things that Brother Winkler put in. One is an Oriental proverb that is very enlightening. Water does not remain on the mountain or vengeance in a great mind. Well, I mean, water does not stay on the mountain. So a great mind, and you could say a Christian mind, a mind that is has its mind set on the right thing, that has its mind set on the right goal. It's not going to, well, you know what, my hatred is going to get me what I want, or, well, you know what, I'm going to get back at them for what they've done to me. It goes on to render evil for evil is devilish, to return good for good is human, but to return good for evil is godlike. And you could say it's Christ-like. And what does the term Christian mean? We're being Christ-like. So if we hate someone, we're returning evil for evil. If we return good for good, we're being just a human. But if we want to be the best that we can be, if we want to love like Christ loved, even if someone has wronged us, even if someone has done something to us, instead of hating them, return good for evil. And then it makes me, I can't think of where it is. If you read the New Testament, it's in there. But it says reap or heap coals of, coals on their head. And it's talking about return kindness for evil. And by doing that, you're just going to make them all that more mad and they're not going to have anything to do. You're going to return good for evil. So let's look at the consequences of if we give into the hate. It will rob you. It'll rob you of your life. The more that you hate, the more that you let it take control of you, it's going to just wear your life away. You're going to have health issues that'll come from it. It'll do other things. It'll take your life. It'll rob your health. It'll rob your peace of mind. It makes you a slave of that person that you hate. Hate somebody and you will become their slave. It'll basically be to the point to where they're all you think about. They're all you worry about. They're all you just do anything about. Your life will be consumed with them and them alone. It will harm you physically. Hate is a disease producing emotion. So are jealousy, envy, self-centeredness, ambition, rage, and resentment. What a person eats is not as important as the bitter spirit and the feelings of guilt that eat him. And that is from None of These Diseases by Dr. S.I. McMullen. Or McMillan. So it literally will cause health problems if you allow it to overtake you. So it will rob you. It will make you their slave. It will harm you physically. It is spiritual suicide. And my next point that I put is hate is a bee. B-E-E. What does a bee do for self-defense? It stings you, but it stings you so hard that it gets the barbs of its stinger stuck in you. And the only way to release itself is by pulling its stinger out, and thus by killing itself. Hate is going to do that to you. You're committing spiritual suicide because you're going to get so deep into it that by the time you die, you have no spiritual left. You have nothing spiritual left about you if you let the hate control you. Hate and death go together. I mean, either A, you hate someone so much that you're willing to kill them, or B, something happens and you hate yourself so much for it that you'll take your own life. And I decided to watch 13 Reasons Why just recently. And basically throughout it, it shows all the things that caused the main character to commit suicide herself. But then in it, it shows that while she was the victim of these other people, she basically watched while another person was made a victim of one of these people, and she did nothing about it. And she hated that she had let that happen so much that she killed herself over it. If you hate enough, you will kill because of it, or kill yourself because of it. And it might not always go that far, but in a certain way, you're basically killing yourself from all the physical harm that it can do to you, that it will do to you. And as if it wasn't made noticeable enough by saying spiritual suicide, it will keep you out of heaven. Hate will kill us and could kill others. Hate is a work of the flesh. Hate is murder. And as John said, no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. 1 John 3:15. So, we've talked about we have to be like God. We have to love the sinner but hate the sin. We have to know hate. We have to know it so that we can see when we're getting too close to it and back away. So we can see if we get anywhere near hating someone and stop ourselves. What's the cure for hate? That's another four-letter word. L-O-V-E. L-O-V-E. I'm not going to read all these because we're running a bit short on time, but the cure is love. If you look at it, John 13:35, love is the badge of discipleship. John 15:12, and then you can even look at verse 15:13. It is a command. We are commanded to love one another. We can think, if ye are my disciples, ye shall keep my commandments. He commands us to love. He died for us. We can look at the second greatest commandment, Matthew 22:37-40. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and then you're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself. Romans 13:8, love is the fulfilling of the law. 1 John 2:10, love will prevent us from being a stumbling block to others, and it will stop us from stumbling ourselves. It is necessary to be in the light. For 1 John 2:9-11. And then we can even look at, in between there is 1 John 2:10 for stumbling. It is a mark of divine sonship, 1 John 3:10. It is a mark of true conversion. Remember how we talked of early that hating is a sign of a person that is in an unregenerate state? Loving is a sign of true conversion, divine sonship. Christ loved us, we're to love others as he loved us. It is a mark of spiritual life, 1 John 3:14. Hatred is spiritual suicide. Love is a mark of spiritual life. 1 John 3:15, without love, we are all murderers. 1 John 4:7-8, with love, we are born of God and known of God. 1 John 4:11, we should love because we were first loved. God didn't have to love us, but he loved us so much that he gave his son while we were his enemies. Romans 5:8. We must love for God to dwell in us and have his love to be perfected in us. 1 John 4:12. Without love, we do not love God. 1 John 4:20 and then 1 John 5:1-2. So, the cure is love. What is the nature of love? We are to love others as we love ourselves. And I constantly think of Ephesians 5, how the husband is supposed to love his wife as his own body. Most husbands aren't going to go out and just look in the mirror and, oh, you're so ugly today. Oh, your glasses make you look so stupid. Oh, you're so fat and ugly. No, you don't talk to yourself like that in the mirror. But you go out and you might not say it out loud, but you'll look at someone, oh, his glasses make him look like such a retard. Or you'll go to your wife and you might think, wow, she needs to lose some weight. You might go to your best friend and, well, you know what? That outfit just looks horrible on them. And those all might just be trivial things, but you don't talk about yourself that way. Again, as Evelyn said, kind of something with pride. You don't talk to yourself that way, but you talk to others that way. Why? Because you think you're better than them? Possibly. We are to love them as ourselves. We are to love fervently. 1 Peter 1:22-23 and 4:8. We are to love genuinely and unhypocritically. How do you know if someone genuinely loves you? How do you know if their love is unhypocritical? And that answer might be different for all of us. I know for me, it's that, like for Rachel, she puts up with me. You can ask her. I could ask her right now and she'll tell you, I'm a piece of work. I have a lot of problems and she's put up with them for 4 years and she's gonna put up with them for more. But I know I'm a piece of work. I know she loves me because there have been so many times that she could have just, in the middle of the night while I was at work or while I was away somewhere, that she could have just taken the kids and left, but she didn't because she loves me. We are to love with a pure heart. We are to love in word and deed and not word only. How do you love in word and deed? I mean, you show them that you love them. You don't just, oh, well, I'm here for you. I mean, if you know that they're going through something, you pray for them. You're there for them when you need them. If you just say, oh, well, you know what? Kind of like James 2. So if you know a brother's hungry and you say, well, be ye warmed and filled, you haven't done anything. But if you know that they're hungry, if you know that they need someone and you're there for them, you're going to help. And as Evelyn was talking about, instead of hating, I think it was Evelyn that talked about it, like that we're always looking at ourselves instead of what we could do to either make ourselves stop hating them or to help that out. How to overcome hate. Look at Matthew 5:44 again. Look at Matthew 5:44. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them which hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. So you can pray for the object of your hate. You can pray for them. Find something good to do for them. I know that one thing Brother Mosher told me when Rachel and I were going through counseling with him one time is, if you're ever having an argument, if you're holding the other person's hands, you can't get mad at them. And I mean, I've tried that. I don't know if we've ever successfully been able to hold each other's hands while we're arguing, but Brother Mosher's been able to do it. There's other people that have most likely been able to do it. So if you do something good for someone, if you show, the way I'm going to put it, if you show affection towards them, if you show goodwill towards them, it's going to be harder for you to hate them. Try to sincerely understand the person who is disliked and resented. And I think Randy had said something along those lines earlier. Try to sincerely understand the person who is disliked and resented. And then Brother Winkler put the quote, to know all is to forgive all. And then Proverbs 15:17. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. And then Booker T. Washington said this, I will not let any man reduce my soul to the level of hatred. Because if you stoop to the level of hatred, you can't be a Christian and hate at the same time. Questions, comments, concerns, critiques? Well, that is the last of my class. Exactly, thank you. And going off of that, there have been times where I know when I was in Pearlington, I know that there was times where I didn't hate a member, but me and her or me and him were having a disagreement or that we weren't on equal terms. And then we'd have a potluck and it was as if things went away. So, I mean, I guess point being, fellowship with everyone. I mean, don't just fellowship with your clique. Don't just fellowship with your family or the people that you know, but try to get around and talk to everyone. And I mean, if someone has a problem with you and you're coming up and you're talking to them every day, sooner or later, they're either going to say, well, you know what? At one point I had not liked you, or at one point such and such, or finally something will happen and you'll be able to understand. And you might not have known that they hated you, disliked you, but by talking to everyone, if someone had a problem with you, they'll be finally become comfortable enough to say, you know what, this is something that's been bothering me, and you guys can talk it out. And I mean, that's just something I saw from Pearlington. That's one thing that I saw from going to preaching school, being in a room with, I don't remember how many people I had in my class, but being stuck in a room with guys for 8 hours a day, you learn to get along. And if someone has a problem with you, they either talk to you about it, or if they have a problem with your wife, or you have a problem with their wife, they settle it with you, because you're in a room together. You have fellowship, and by having that fellowship, they're comfortable enough to come to you to talk to you about it, instead of just bottling it up until it's too late for them to deal with it. Any other questions, comments? Exactly. And I didn't get to it, or I didn't make that point. I forgot to put it in. But if you look at God and the Bible and it being His law, anytime you transgress that law, what are you basically telling God? Oh well, I hate you, or oh well, your law isn't good enough for me. And again, Proverbs 6, and then all of the other ones. If you say, I'm too good for your law, you have a pride problem. If you continue to constantly sin, well, God, I just don't love you enough to obey your law. And I think if we could think on those things more often, and as has been going on with the reading tree, if we keep our head in the Bible, and if we actually read it and try to understand it more ourselves, not saying that we don't understand it, but if we kept our heads in it more, and if we were to apply it to ourselves every day, if we looked at, just for instance, 1 Corinthians 13 and said, how does this fit me? How does this apply to me? Then I think it would make it easier for us, not just fellowshipping with each other, but it would make it easier for us to notice that either we have a problem with a brother or a sister, or that we hate them and we didn't know that we hated them. Thank you.